Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
It's Tuesday, the 19th of December, 2017. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, South Africa's political parties urge newly elected ANC party leader Cyril Ramaphosa to sanction charges of corruption against President Jacob Zuma.
He has to show some real courage and demonstrate to all of us that he's willing to charge Jacob Zuma, stop the nuclear deal, and ultimately recall him as president.
Cameroon cracks down on secessionists in English-speaking regions after four soldiers were killed. We hear from a correspondent.
I would say the situation is still quite tense. When you kill four police officers, it's just normal that you have the military reacting to that kind of killing.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you.
But first, let's listen to what has been happening around the world.
I am Kai Dombok with the DW News. The Democratic Republic of Congo is bracing for more protests 1 year after President Joseph Kabila was supposed to step down. Kabila's second term officially ended on this day in 2016. The country's constitution does not allow for presidents to run for a third term. The National Episcopal Conference of the Congo said security forces killed at least 53 protesters between April and October this year. Berlin today marked the one-year anniversary of a terrorist attack. A truck driven by a rejected asylum seeker plowed into a Christmas market, killing 12 people. German Chancellor Angela Merkel was on hand to remember the victims.
Heute ist ein Tag der Trauer.
Today is a day of mourning, but also a day to show our will to improve things which didn't go well. Thank you.
Security has been stepped up in Christmas markets around Germany following the attack. Uganda's parliament swiftly ended its Tuesday session after a massive uproar over a debate to remove the age cap on presidential candidates. President Yoweri Museveni, who is 73, would be too old to run for president again until the current age limit in the constitution. Police and soldiers had to enter the chamber to prevent further scuffles. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. Saudi Arabia says it intercepted an Iranian-made Houthi missile that was targeting the royal palace in Riyadh. This is the second time in as many months that rebel missiles have reached as far into the country as Riyadh. Saudi Arabia has placed a blockade on Yemen during the ongoing conflict, putting millions at risk of famine. U.S. President Donald Trump's description of Russia and China as rival powers was not taken kindly by Moscow or Beijing. Russia accused Trump of being imperialist, and China said the U.S. should abandon its Cold War mentality. Trump's description came when he outlined his national security plan, which is in stark contrast to previously friendly meetings with the two countries this year. Workers continue to sort through the wreckage of a train crash in Washington state. A train operating the inaugural run of a high-speed line between Seattle and Portland jumped the tracks. The train then fell off of an overpass and left at least three people dead. Initial investigations show the train was traveling around a bend at more than twice the posted speed limit at the time of the crash. And in sports, the third round of the German Cup kicks off with four matches tonight. The only third league team remaining, Paderborn, will host Ingolstadt. Mainz takes on Stuttgart, Bundesliga basement dweller Cologne travels to Schalke, and Nuremberg welcomes Wolfsburg. The remaining matches of the round will take place Wednesday evening. This will be the last German football action of 2017. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome back once again to the program with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Now, we start off in South Africa, and opposition parties and civil society groups have urged the newly elected leader of the ruling ANC and president-in-waiting Cyril Ramaphosa to quickly bring to book all those involved in corruption scandals, including his predecessor, President Jacob Zuma. Ramaphosa has been urged to initiate much-needed policies aimed at revamping the economy. From South Africa, Subri Govender sent this report.
Since the election of Ramaphosa as leader of the ANC, hopes are high among many South Africans that Ramaphosa will defeat corruption, strengthen governance, and help restore collapsing state institutions. There have also been growing calls from different sections of society, especially political parties, for Ramaphosa to immediately restore sanity in the country and deal firsthand with all those involved in corruption scandals that shouldn't spare President Jacob Zuma. Musi Maimane, the leader of the main opposition Democratic Alliance, says Ramaphosa must act decisively to save the country.
He has to show some real courage and demonstrate to all of us that he's willing to charge Jacob Zuma, stop the nuclear deal, and ultimately recall him as president.
Solly Mapaila, a senior leader of the Communist Party that supported Ramaphosa, believes that Ramaphosa will take the necessary steps to restore morals, values, and principles in the ANC and the country.
The buck stops with him as president. So he'll have to prove himself like he did in previous responsibilities. We want everyone who's implicated, particularly in the Gupta emails and in the whole project of state capture, including of the capture of the ANC. So we'll continue to raise this matter.
But for Ivor Sarensky, a political scientist at the University of the Witwatersrand, South Africans have been yearning for change, and therefore Ramaphosa must demonstrate the willingness to bring about a change in the current socio-economic situation that is prevalent in the country.
He's got to get some quick wins. He's got to get some quick gains. He's made promises in his New Deal, and he's got to get them done, at least show serious momentum in the first 6 months. His credibility is on the line. It's very, very tough ask.
Despite South Africa being Africa's largest economy, unemployment rate among the youth remains high, and less empathy towards marginalized groups shows no signs of ending. They can only hope that Cyril Ramaphosa will improve their predicament.
Subri Govender there, reporting from South Africa.
And Jen, at this moment, would like to welcome our listeners who are following us live on Facebook. Rutarika Alex from Kigali says he's listening and following DW from Rwanda. And Ahmed Musa says, I love the live streaming. Mzalendo Dixon says he's listening from Tanzania. Keep on listening. Now, Jen, Pascal on Facebook says, I think Cyril Ramaphosa will likely be more just on Zuma's corruption and other cases than his former wife.
Yeah. An interesting one there. Old corrupt folks walking around the table, nothing new. That is a Sakang Mesumbe. That is what he's saying. South Africans should vote for Julius Malema. That
Iria
is who
Kokorode
they
says,
need.
Ramaphosa is not always seen in the public and in corruption cases. Anyway, we'll come back to those comments whenever we can. Now, Berlin has marked 1 year since an attack on a Christmas market in the city by opening a new memorial to the victims. 12 people died and dozens were wounded in the first major Islamist attack in Germany. Chancellor Angela Merkel's government has faced criticism for its response to the attack. She made some remarks following today's memorial ceremony. Let's listen in and then follow up an interview that our colleague Sumi Somaskanda had with DW's chief political correspondent, Melinda Crane, on the Chancellor's statement.
I have to speak now on behalf of myself and on behalf of the German government to say that we need to work to improve the way we deal with things like this.
So, Melinda, the Chancellor there saying Germany must do better. How significant was that statement?
It was quite significant. The story behind this is the following. The German government responded after the attack a year ago with a great deal of concern about public opinion in general, very eager to give the message to Germans that this kind of thing would not happen again and that the German government wouldn't be cowed by terrorism. They somewhat left out of the picture the immense distress that was felt by the families of the victims. Some of them waited for days before the government even told them whether their loved ones were alive or dead. That's what she's speaking to right there. She did meet with the families yesterday, but it was the first time that the Chancellor herself actually did meet with them since the attack.
Melinda, let's return to prevention and protection of public spaces, as you said, because there were glaring failures by Germany's security services, weren't there?
Soft targets, as they've come to be called, open squares like that in Germany a year ago, were not protected by those concrete barricades that you now saw put in place there. They had some police presence, but not anything like as intense as it is now. So that's the protection side. The prevention side is that, there were basically failures at a number of different levels, but absolutely key, and again, this was mentioned in the report, was the failure of different local and national authorities to cooperate with one another. There were a lot of good rules in place, but the fact is some of them weren't enforced, and some of them simply slipped through the cracks because authorities weren't talking to each other. There are some moves to change that, but much more can still be done.
DW's chief political correspondent Melinda Crane on Chancellor Angela Merkel's comments following the ceremony that was held in memories of the victims of the Christmas attack at the market.
Let's now cross over to Cameroon, and separatists seeking independence in English-speaking region killed four police officers as dispute with the Francophone-dominated government degenerate into open warfare. Several separatists were also killed by security forces during the clashes. The separatists have launched a series of deadly raids on police and soldiers in recent weeks, leading authorities to escalate a crackdown that has killed dozens of civilians. Shortly before I came on air, I spoke to DW's Killiam Chimpton in Yaoundé, and he began by telling me the current situation in the English-speaking region.
I would say the situation is still quite tense. When you kill four police officers, it's just normal that you have the military reacting to that kind of killing. We have information that about 20 people were wounded and that they are receiving treatment in hospital. We have no details about how many civilians were killed, but we are told that quite a number of them were killed. And now, the person giving all this information is the Minister of Communication, who actually granted a press conference to give details of what actually happened. Here is Mr. Issa Chiruma Bakari, the Minister of Communication.
Armed gangs claiming to belong to various secessionist movements have recently led attacks against the position of the defense and security forces, especially in the border areas and some locality along the western border of Cameroon.
That was Communication Minister Issa Chiruma Bakari. Well, having said that, the information about the killings is coming from the government. How reliable is this information?
Sometimes it's very difficult to independently get the reliability of the information. Anything can happen and be attributed to secessionists.
And what are people saying in the capital, Yaoundé, with all this crackdown going on in English-speaking region and the killings of the security officers in that particular region?
Well, people are really worried. I mean, Cameroon has always been touted as a country that lives at peace with itself. And when these kinds of things begin to happen, people are naturally very, very worried. People are calling on the president to clearly articulate what has become known as the Anglophone problem so that Cameroon returns to its legendary peace and hospitality that has always defined the existence of the country.
DW's Killian Chimtom in Yaoundé, Cameroon, talking about the killing of four police officers in English speaking region.
And this is the story we keep on monitoring. We'll always cover it whenever we can. We have correspondents everywhere in Yaoundé and also, I mean, who always bring us the story about what's taking place on the ground. In the meantime, keep your comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, about the topics that we're covering, and we'll always read them live on air right here on Africa Link. And this is a story breaking up Jen. It's about the UN refugee chief has said the world must do more to help millions of refugees across sub-Saharan Africa, which hosts more than a quarter of the world's refugees. And in the meantime, you know, Kenya has the most refugees in the Dadaab camp. In the
absolutely.
Recently, it wanted to close up that camp.
Yeah, it was to be closed down. But right now, I think Uganda is taking a big chunk of refugees at the moment in
yes.
Africa. Yeah,
especially from South Sudan. And
absolutely.
Kenya's government says it wants the Dadaab, which hosts over 230,000 inhabitants, shut down, but the UN is urging patience and says all repatriations must be voluntary. I think it even became political in such a way that they said repatriation must be voluntary, not forced.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, these are all the stories that we keep on monitoring for you, and we always cover them whenever the need arises. In the meantime, we welcome those, once again, welcome those following us on Facebook Live.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we are live on Facebook, DW Africa. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Ugandan scientists develop super beans that are drought resistant and highly nutritious.
In a season, we sell about 250 to 300 metric tons of beans. And we have already sold some beans in the areas of West Nile where we have the Sudan refugees.
Remember, we are live on Facebook, DW Africa, so keep the conversation going. Now, today marks exactly 1 year after DRC President Joseph Kabila's second term as president ran out. The opposition has called for another round of protest for Kabila to step down. Under DR Congo's constitution, Kabila isn't eligible to run for a third term, but the country has failed several times to hold a presidential election. The president now looks likely to remain in office until the delayed elections take place. This report by Daniel Pels is now presented by Zipora Nyambura.
Joseph Kabila was supposed to step down as president of DR Congo in December 19, 2016. But Kabila has remained in office after the country failed to hold elections for a replacement. Since then, violence is escalating amid political uncertainty about how long Kabila will cling to power. There's also growing polarization between the government and the opposition. Despite earlier promises of holding the vote on December 23, 2018, after pressure from Western powers, the country's Electoral Commission has already said that the vote will probably take place in April 2019. Phil Clark, an expert on Congo from SOAS, a London-based institute specializing in Africa and Asia, thinks that tougher times lie ahead now that the opposition is deeply fragmented.
The opposition in Congo is in a very difficult situation at the moment, in that they themselves are extremely divided. There have been various attempts over the last 12 months to try to build a more coherent opposition coalition, but we've seen that coalition start to break down in the last few months.
Amid fears that the election could be infinitely postponed, the opposition is demanding that Kabila vacate his post by the end of this year. Experts like Greg Ayeke, the representative of the Konrad Adenauer Foundation in DR Congo, also are not convinced the polls will go ahead as planned.
Immediately after the election date was published, the so-called Independent Electoral Commission declared that there were still many logistical, financial and legal obstacles that could influence the election timetable. If the commission is already giving reasons why it can't meet the deadline, then you start asking yourself if there are serious intentions to hold the election.
President Kabila is also worried that charges might be pressed against him once he leaves office, as further explained by Eke.
Another reason for Kabila to hold on to power is fear of prosecution, either in his own country or by the International Criminal Court. The international community needs to raise the topic of amnesty if it hopes to convince Kabila to step down.
The European Union has also been outspoken in its concerns over the election delays. Earlier this month, it extended sanctions against 16 members of Kabila's government who are not allowed to travel to the EU and have had their bank accounts frozen.
That report by Daniel Pels was presented by Zipora Nyambura.
Now, Jen, we have so many comments, people reacting to that story. DK Victor says, what has it done for Congo with all huge mineral resources? Nothing. Congo still looks like a very poor place.
We have this one from Amoro Suwanea. He says, step down for your own good and the people of Congo as a whole. We don't need dictatorship in Africa anymore. We are sick and tired of leaders overstaying in power.
And Jared King wrote on a Facebook page and has a question. Someone has the power to postpone elections for 3 years? What a pity.
And Nane Eva is asking, what's wrong with some of the African leaders? Must they always cling to power?
Yeah, many of you are still reacting on this story. Brown Shom Wanumala says he should step down and stop causing more shame than he already has. And of course, Yazid Dusalim says he wanna cry. Just in two words. I mean, for him, she's feeling emotional about, you know, Joseph Kabila postponing the elections for 3 years. Anyway, we'll be back right after this.
Africa on the move.
And for our Africa on the Move segment this week, we take you to Uganda, where scientists have developed super beans that are drought-resistant and highly nutritious. The development is in a bid to increase yields on the production of beans in the country that are the main source of protein in large communities like schools, prisons, and barracks, as well as refugee camps scattered around the country. From Kampala, Frankie Gass sent this report.
I find 55-year-old Florence Nakasumba in her garden threshing her super beans. She is a small-scale farmer in Masaka District in central Uganda. She tells me she grows Nabe 15 beans because this type makes work easy for her.
These beans are good yield. You have to plant one seed. You have to plant it very early and you have to make sure that it is in a well-weeded. We weed at least 3 times.
Packing different varieties of super beans ready for dispatch is one of the activities in the warehouse of Pearl Seeds Company. The director, Richard Masagazi, says the high demand of these biofortified beans is for first come, first serve.
In a season, you sell about 250 to 300 metric tons of beans. And we have already sold some beans in the areas of West Nile where we have the Sudan refugees. More beans will go to those areas. So many people are after them, so we don't know who comes in first to take them.
Anne is a specialized dealer in super beans. She supplies them majorly in various schools in Mukono, Gulu, and Kiriandongo districts. She tells me at times these seeds are rare.
It's actually very hard to find it on the market because somehow what comes out all goes. Everything that is produced keeps going, like it is so marketable.
Gabriel Luima is one of the scientists at the National Crop Resources who developed the 23 varieties of Nabe seeds, also known as super beans.
We had reasons why we developed that bean. There was a problem of diseases which were attacking the beans. So our farmers were getting a lot of problems with the yields. Another major thing which we also looked at was bean production in areas where other beans could not perform, especially in areas with the sandy soils and the water retention was low.
The government of Uganda is impressed by these fast-maturing, high-yield bean varieties. The commissioner in charge of refugees, Kazungu David Apollo, says these seeds will address the feeding gap experienced by the ever-increasing number of refugees, estimated at over 1.4 million.
A food self-sufficiency is an idea that government thinks is worth investing in to ensure that you dignify the livelihoods of these persons while in asylum. So, introduction of the Nabe bean variety is a welcome innovation. They are conducive for the environs, more so West Nile. We've seen a number of interventions being done by various actors, and this is one of them that we feel can go a long way in addressing the question of malnutrition and food self-sufficiency.
Frank Iga reporting from Kampala on the super beans.
Focus Europe.
Now, are you a dangerous driver? Be on the lookout because a drone may soon be watching you. Police in France are pioneering the use of traffic drones, and in just a few months, they've already issued hundreds of fines thanks to the spy in the sky. From France, John Lorenzon reports.
A drone climbs into the sky to fix its glass eye on the busy Bordeaux Beltway. On the ground, police captain Pascal Jansou scrutinises the images it's sending down to the monitor. We're in a quiet road that's next to the highway, but hidden from it by trees.
The drone is very useful because we can see dangerous drivers on the roads,
without being seen by them.
Today, they're going after truckers.
Dangerous behaviours like unrespecting distances of security or forbidden overtaking.
He doesn't have to wait long.
Équipage SMA disponible 23 dans camion blanc.
White truck, red and black letters on the side. Illegal passing, he says into his walkie-talkie.
Dépassement interdit.
Motorcycle cops waiting down the road from the drone zone receive the description and move to intercept.
This kind of operation, we can stop from 15 to 20 trucks in an hour.
The road safety campaigner Christophe Ramond of the lobby group Prévention Routière says it's great.
What's good about this is that it enables us to identify dangerous driving that goes unseen and unsanctioned at the moment. If you just look at accidents involving heavy goods vehicles, we have between 700 and 800 fatalities a year in France due to accidents involving trucks. So it is definitely useful to make sure truck drivers respect the minimum safety distance with the vehicle in front and do not drive dangerously.
Speed cameras already earn the French government $750 million a year in fines. For Pierre Chasseret of the lobby group 40 Million Drivers, traffic drones are an unwelcome escalation on what he says is a sort of war on drivers.
C'est quand même fou qu'on soit toujours dans la démesure en train d'imaginer des nouveaux systèmes répressifs en France.
It's amazing how inventive we are in France when it comes to finding new forms of repression. Just think, instead of encouraging drivers to keep their eyes on the roads, we now have to look at the side of the road for speed cameras, and now in the air for drones. Maybe the next step will be to send in the Air Force.
Chasseret would prefer prevention, he says. More road safety awareness campaigns, for example. In any event, the drone is nabbing drivers like this trucker I spoke to as he paid his fine. How much is it then, sir?
90 euros.
90 euros, he says. What did they say you did? The drone, or whatever it is, caught me overtaking. You weren't expecting that? No, if I'd been expecting it, I wouldn't have been stupid enough to overtake. The federal government likes the look of the Bordeaux drone experiment. It says it's looking into purchasing drones in order to bring similar traffic surveillance operations to other parts of the country.
John Rawlinson reporting from France. Imagine, Isaac, if drones were, traffic drones were to be introduced in Africa.
I think for me, it's a good idea. It's a brilliant idea.
Absolutely.
Not spying, but actually keeping society safe.
It's going. It's also going to some extent, I think it can reduce the road carnage that we usually witness, especially during this festive season.
The festive season, we've been, watching social media reports in Uganda, accidents every now and then. And recently, city authorities decided to remove traffic officers for only one day. But in the streets, it was mayhem. People spent 3 hours, 4 hours stuck, not moving even a meter. To me, it's not spying, but rather keeping society safe.
Absolutely.
And we'd like also to acknowledge our followers on Facebook page. John Nokedi says, we need radical change in Africa following, from South Korea. That's where he is. Many thanks, John Nokedi. I think he's talking about the story of DRC. Today, it marks exactly 1 year after President Joseph Kabila's second term as president ran out. He kept on postponing elections. And in the meantime, Jen, the opposition is calling for another round of protests. If you want, you can call them mega protests for Kabila to step down. It's a story that we keep on monitoring. And of course, Hawa Abdallah says, oh, God bless Africa. Jen, there's a story that we did
and
about.
I have to acknowledge Ahmed Musa, who is also listening to us from Nigeria.
And there's a story about migration and music. It is a contentious subject that we've been covering, the migration dilemma. Dida produced a new documentary about 6 migrants and their life in Germany. You can find it on our page and under the hashtag After the Escape. The documentary includes Nigerian musician Nneka Egbuna, whose songs are about corruption, oil, and problems in her country. And we asked you which musicians sing about society issues in your countries. Here are the examples that you gave us.
Tabana Sitte in Uganda, we have Bobby Wine, who sings about Yoweri Museveni.
And Wado Hill says, here in Angola, we have MCK, those are initials. We also have Brigadeiro, Ten Pacotes, I know him at least, and a male singer that was banned from Angola because of politics.
And Milton Mutepa says that Pilato is doing it for Zambia. The boy is fearless.
Many thanks to our production crew behind the scenes. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.